can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. It's 9:01 here in Pacific time zone, and you're listening to KBOO. Polar air has blasted into Portland. Meanwhile, air from the Gulf of Mexico has wandered as far north as Hudson Bay. I'll have a little more on that later in the show. I walked here. Because my car doesn't take chains, the type of, that I just got. And so it wasn't a matter of trying to slip and slide here. I just took the bus and walked by people sleeping in the snow. Their faint vapor shows them to be alive. You alive, buddy? Yoli. But for how long? Tents in the streets. Capitalism has failed. And before I say anything about today's news headlines, I want to ask you, what is capitalism? Because most people don't actually know what capitalism is. It's not economic activity. A lot of people think capitalism is the exchange of goods for money. It's not. That's an aspect of it. But it doesn't define capitalism. It's not the accumulation of capital. These are more or less innocuous components of a system of oppression. So let me tell you what capitalism is. Let's say that you found a way to make a piece of furniture. And you discovered that people want to buy your piece of furniture. Let's say it's just a particularly appealing chair. And so you decide that you're going to make several of these chairs, and you're going to sell them. You're not a capitalist. You're selling several of the chairs. You're thinking maybe you need some help with that and get some friends and relatives together on that. And you say, well, let's make these chairs and... I'm going to need to pay back the amount of, that I put into it from my tools and for this wood here in the, and advertising and stuff, and then we'll split the rest. And they say, okay. So y'all get together and you sell chairs. You're not a capitalist. Now, at some point, you're really selling these chairs. They're popular. By the way, I don't want to promote the... One of the favorite myths of capitalism that you can start off this way. You won't. Maybe you will for a little while. If you get something, if you're selling a chair or just about anything else that's really hot and people just really want it, well, what's going to happen is someone's going to get a copy. Someone's going to get that chair or make a digital copy of it, transmit it to someplace, you know, Guangdong or somewhere, where they will produce thousands of them, far less than you ever thought, for far less than you ever could imagine producing them. They will flood the market with them, and if it's convenient, it will have your signature on the bottom. So you're not going to get started this way and make it big. I don't want to promote that myth. But let's say you're selling these chairs, you're doing okay. And you say, well, let's start the chair company. And so your relatives and friends say, okay. And you set it up and you get yourself a charter. You get yourself a license to sell taxes. And you tell the people making the chairs that now you're the boss and they're the employees. Well, now you're a capitalist. And why is that? Because you have set their wages. You have defined them. They have become employees. They were working with you. They were engaging in economic activity. They were making something. Y'all had a cooperative going, actually. And now you've taken that away from them, and it happens just like that. It's really quick. You take that away from them and say, well, we'll pay you X, Y, Z close to what you were making before, or maybe not. You make profits off those chairs, and you pay the people who are doing the selling, the accounting, the manufacturer of the chairs, you pay them a wage. Instead of them being participants in this economic activity, instead of you just getting paid back properly for you know what you've done and your expenses, you accumulate everything except their wage. And the wage is not set by the value of the chairs. The wage is set by the desperation of everyone else who needs a job. That's capitalism. And it has failed, utterly failed. And I don't want to put down people who are trying to struggle and have a small capitalist thing going in town, and you're just trying to do your thing within the context of capitalism, and I don't care. You know, it's like, I'm not going to put a big moral onus on you. I'm saying that's where it starts, and that's how you get companies like Exxon, which are not there for their own workers. They're certainly not there, as their corporate charters say, for all the people. They're not there for the benefit of the society as a whole. They're there for the benefit of a small parasite class. And this parasite class has become very, very parasitic, and it is the problem. And the fact that for various reasons, exacerbated by the various hierarchies that feed into capitalism, sexism, racism, homophobia, these days, imperialism, these days, if you fall short of a certain amount of cash, a certain amount of time, certain amount of status, you're likely to end up on the streets, whether it's snowing or not. The failure of capitalism. And several people have died over the last couple of weeks in Portland, simply frozen to death on the streets, died of exposure. This is a horror. It is a shame. It is capitalism. And I am standing here to say that this capitalism, well, I suppose one can reform it to certain degrees, but as long as capitalism is invisible as itself, it will continue in this way, people thinking that it is natural and normal when it is actually a usurpation of human rights and a way of using racism, sexism, classism. Now, how's it used sexism, you ask me? Well, have you ever noticed that women are in charge of childcare? It's a funny thing. Men and women produce children, but women get stuck with childcare. How'd that happen? Well, it sure is profitable. It's profitable in a small way. For every man, it's profitable in various other ways. It's a hierarchy. It's something that's not questioned. Now we're about to have a sexist in chief who has utter contempt for all women, and especially those who do not look like supermodels. So, for that and so many reasons, I stand for the overthrow of capitalism. I don't think it can be reformed because it's rotten from the get-go. It's a bad decision. If you want economic activity, you want to benefit the community, form a cooperative. It's not that hard to do. Look up the word cooperative. Okay, so now I want to go to some headlines, talk about the topics of the day, and we've got plenty of them, enough to absolutely confuse you, enough to confuse me. But the first thing I want to talk about is the general strike that is coming up against the onrushing Trump fascism. A number of Bay Area figures have joined a loose-knit coalition of artists, critics, and scholars that have issued a call for January 20th act of noncompliance on Inauguration Day. That's on sfgate.com. Among them, photographer David Mazel and arts faculty members Julia Bryan Wilson of UC Berkeley, TJ Demos of UC Santa Cruz, Jennifer Gonzalez of UC Santa Cruz, and others. The J20 Art Strike, as it's called, is meant to disrupt work, school, and business in solidarity with calls for general strike. The call is directed to museums and galleries as well as other visual and performing arts institutions, but it is in solidarity for the general strike inauguration day. What are you going to do on inauguration day? You going to sit there? Anyway, as of this writing, more than 250 had signed for the act of noncompliance on inauguration day amongst artists. Here's some more information from alternet.org. Under the pseudonym Marianne Hastings, as protests against the election of Donald Trump continue, many have called on demonstrators to give the president-elect a chance to wait and see what he does in office. But those curious about Trump's immediate priorities need look no further than his contract with the American voter, which he released in October. In it, he effectively promised that by the end of April of this year, he would cancel many of President Obama's executive orders that protect workers and immigrants and the environment, beginning with barring millions of Muslims from entry to the U.S., imprisoning or deporting millions of undocumented workers. We're talking about 11 million. Cancel all federal funding to sanctuary cities, that would include Portland, and climate change programs. Lift restrictions on shale oil and gas extraction and coal extraction. Fast-track pipeline projects. And kick millions of people off their health insurance. Many of these promises are executive actions that Trump will be able to enact without the cooperation of Congress. Not that he wouldn't have it. These are what the Trump campaign has called the First Day Project, which Trump, based on signing at least 25 executive orders, would seek to erase the Obama presidency. As individuals and groups that oppose this agenda, they write, there is no time to wait. Trump has been clear about his goals and has begun assembling a team to effectuate those goals. Resistance is already taking various shapes in communities across the country, but we need a mass action, they write, that unites all those who oppose the Trump agenda from day one. On January 20th, 2017, we need to launch a general strike and boycott. Some are already calling it a sick out to capture the spirit of the reason behind not going to work on that day. And as I've been saying, Doctor, it's my eyes. I just can't see going to work. As individuals, they write, we have three primary sources of power, as voters, as workers, and as consumers. Donald Trump was victorious at the polls, and despite the undemocratic nature of the Electoral College, he is entitled to assume the presidency. He is not, however, entitled to carry out his destructive agenda unopposed. Though we were not successful as voters, we can stop him by using our power as workers and consumers. They write, a general strike and boycott or sick out would be a commitment to not go to work or buy anything on January 20th. It would not focus on any single cause or demand. Instead, it would be a show of our collective power in opposition to Trump's extremism. And I would add to the obvious fascism and to the flying brown shirt squads. More on that in a few minutes. This action will show the country and the world that we will not participate in Trump's America as he has described it. It will do so in the most powerful way possible by shutting down as much as possible the nation's economy. The goal will be to force corporations and politicians to publicly distance themselves from Trump's agenda. The U.S. economy is a massive, complicated machine that runs on predictability and regularity. Disrupting it through a general strike and boycott imposes a cost on accepting Trump's extremism. Speaking again for myself, what will you say to your grandkids on that day that fascism was inaugurated? What did you do? Well, what is the pseudonym that was written on? And this Marianne Hastings pseudonym writing in alternet.org with these words, can we really pull off such a nationwide action? And what happens if we try and fail? At the very least, a national sick out will show us where we stand. If true resources and organization are put into the endeavor and people go to work and continue shopping as if nothing has changed, then it will be a show of weakness on our part. But that too can be useful. Not going to work or buying anything is not a lot to ask of most individuals for something they care deeply about. If, despite our best efforts, this cannot be done now when the wounds are still fresh, all future organizing will have to reflect this difficulty. So they're saying it's kind of a test. Talking about the January 20th Inauguration Day general strike and sick out. And they write, furthermore, a sick out does not foreclose opportunities for future actions. in response to specific policies that the Trump administration will introduce. But we'll be in a better position to do so if we mobilize now to show politicians and corporations what is at stake if Trump follows his stated path. And show all participants what is possible in resisting. This is our strongest weapon, and waiting to display it would be a mistake. In the immortal words of Dr. Strangelove, the whole point of a doomsday machine is lost if you keep it a secret. January 20th is only a few days away, and it has become increasingly apparent that there was no contingency plan for dealing with a Trump administration and a GOP-controlled House, Senate, and Supreme Court. Groups can engage in all other manner of resistance on the inauguration day, from protests to sit-ins, but a general strike and protest can bring all of these actions under one unified and powerful umbrella whose message cannot be misinterpreted. There's a great deal of planning and organizing that is happening. First, all institutions, from labor to civil rights groups, environmental groups, immigrant groups, churches, synagogues, mosques, and all others who oppose the Trump agenda, must work together, they write, to spread the word and coordinate such a massive undertaking. And there's more on the article, but they also write, the message of a national sick out on Inauguration Day will help prepare people for the multiple acts of resistance that will be required by us in so many parts of our lives if we are to avoid the worst over the next 4 years. The only thing holding us back from engaging in this collective action is our hesitancy to believe that it is possible. Do you think it's possible? Will you engage in a sick out on Inauguration Day? And if so, what other actions do you think you might take? Number to call, 503-231-8187. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. It's 9:15 Pacific Time. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I will not even attempt to maintain that I'm not enjoying the tasty cream topped with sprinkles irony of the master of the casual lie, Donald Trump, being beset by unsubstantiated and inflammatory accusations. No, it's really pleasant and amusing to watch it unfold, at least on that shallow level, to see Mr. Where's Your Birth Certificate have to deny everything from golden showers to treason. That is fun, and that is funny, as the Cat in the Hat might say. It reminds me of an anecdote told about Lyndon Baines Johnson when he was running for state office in Texas. As the campaign began, I think this would be in the 40s, he allegedly told an aide to concoct a story about his opponent having sexual congress with pigs, whereupon his aide pointed out that the allegation could not be proven. And the quote was, "I don't care that the story is false," he said, or some version of that. He said, "I just want to see the son of a bitch deny it." It's a known feature of the human mind, and thus of manipulative propaganda, that people remember first impressions no matter what. Johnson understood that. In a few minutes, I'll quote from a portion of Glenn Greenwald's assessment of the Trump allegations situation as printed in The Intercept. And by the way, that's a website you should remember, intercept.org, one of the few sources of actual journalism. First, some headlines, news you're not supposed to know, from Radio Havana. Varios grupos armados se apoderaron, apoderaron este jueves de los ministerios de defensa, justicia y economía en Trípoli, la capital de Libia, en octubre pasado. Informan medios locales. Según las informaciones, los asaltantes estarían vinculados a Khalifa Kuel, el ex primer del disuelto gobierno islámico del Salvación Nacional y protagonista en octubre pasado de un fallido golpe de Estado. And what that says, I imagine if you speak Spanish, you had a hell of a time following me just then. But I'm trying to make the point that we have Spanish programming here in KBOO, and you can hear it in the afternoons. Several armed groups took over Thursday the Defense, Justice, and Economy Ministries in Tripoli, the capital of Libya, local media reported. According to reports, the attackers are linked to Khalifa Kuel, the author of now-dissolved Islamic Government of National Salvation, and the protagonist last October of a failed coup. The Libyan authorities, who control the capital, have not confirmed this information, possibly because they are jumping like jackrabbits and trying to return fire. Libya has been immersed in a war since 2014, framed within the violence that erupted in the country among the armed groups that overthrew Muammar Gaddafi. With the support of NATO troops in 2011. The country has been ungovernable since then. Also from Radio Havana, Cuba, the Pentagon has admitted that U.S. Special Operations troops launched a raid in eastern Syria over the weekend. Unnamed U.S. officials said the raid was carried out by the Expeditionary Task Force and was aimed at capturing top ISIS militants. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, says 25 people were killed in the operation. The website Deir Ezzor 24 quoted witnesses who said the U.S. troops landed by helicopter and then left an hour and a half later, carrying prisoners and bodies. News you're not supposed to know. From Radio Havana, they also say Russia has dismissed allegations that it has collected compromising information on U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, describing them as utter nonsense. Top U.S. intelligence officials last week briefed Trump and outgoing President Barack Obama about unverified claims that Russia was in possession of deeply compromising personal and financial information on the president-elect, according to a report by CNN. There's more on that article, but possibly you've already heard about that stuff. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Now, addressing the allegations against Trump. As I said, it is amusing to see him have to jump and deny this stuff. But I do believe what is going on is an attempt by the deep state to assert its power in advance of his taking power. Glenn Greenwald writes, in January 1961, Dwight Eisenhower delivered his farewell address. After serving two terms as U.S. president, the five-star general chose to warn Americans of the specific threat to democracy. And quoting Eisenhower, "In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist." That warning was issued prior to the decade-long escalation of the Vietnam War. Three more decades of Cold War mania and the post-war, post-9/11 era, all of which radically expanded that unelected faction's power even further. This is the faction that is now engaged in open warfare against the duly elected and already widely disliked president-elect Donald Trump. They're using classic Cold War dirty tactics and the defining ingredients of what is until recently been denounced as fake news. And perhaps you noticed Trump using the phrase fake news rather angrily against a CNN reporter. And that's a funny and ironic thing to say. The number to call with your comments and questions, and I would like to hear about what you think of General Strike on January 20th. There's more articles popping up about that. And as you're dialing 503-231-8187, a few things to remember, and I do charge you to remember these things. There are 235 million American citizens who are eligible to vote. Of those, and that's of 300 million people in the country, of those, 137 million went to the polls and 98 million did not. Now, I don't expect you to remember all those numbers exactly. 300 million people, 235 million can vote, 137 million went to the polls, 98 million did not. You can see where I'm going with this. Of those who voted, 63 million voted for Donald Trump, 65 and more million voted for Hillary Clinton. So Trump's vote comes out to 26.8 of the total eligible citizenry. That's 63 million divided by 235 million. And so not half, not almost, not even close. That was compiled by Alan Johnston, who I think was writing in Alternet. And another thing to remember about the election is, as I said, Hillary Clinton got more votes. Not that I, you know, carry a candle for her. Far more votes. And the electoral vote was won by Trump. But remember, pull up gregpalace.com and get the details. And remember that in the three states where recounts were attempted and shut down, there were six times as many illegally and pretty much racistly denied votes. Six times as many uncounted votes as Trump's margin. In other words, if you do the numbers at all, if you believe in mathematics, you know, maybe not everyone does. Maybe it falls. Maybe it's like evolution. People don't want to believe in mathematics anymore. If you believe in mathematics, Trump stole the election. So we have a fascist who has stolen the election. And as I was saying, I think we're going to have a problem with brown shirts because we're, what are brown shirts? I should define that. Hitler's enforcers is what I'm talking about. And I think we're going to have a brown shirt problem in the United States, if we don't already, because I noticed in reports on Facebook that people were complaining that the police had given out their names and addresses when they were involved in the protests after the election, and armed thugs, showed up at their residences and raised hell. Let's see. I've gotten a note, and it looks like we have callers. All right, so let's go to Rhoda on line one. Well, I've got a note saying, strange bedfellows, how are they responsible for deception against Trump? And Rhoda's on the line.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
I noticed that James Clapper, the intelligence chief, has told Donald Trump, he told him that these leaks that have come out are damaging and corrosive. Well, I've done some research on exactly what was in those dossiers, and I just wanted to let you know that I think that while the leaks about the president-elect making backroom real estate deals with Russia and colluding with the Kremlin to undermine our U.S. democratic election process may be damaging, I feel that the leaks about him having golden showers with Russian prostitutes is definitely corrosive. But the good thing in all of this is we now know how he got his hairdo.
Okay, a joke. I probably shouldn't go further with that joke because of, let's just say, regulations.
But all right, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Number call 503-231-8187. And Lynn is on the air. Hello, Lynn. Are you still there? Okay, Lynn might need to call back. The number call 503-231-8187. Was talking about the propaganda, which has now been applied to Mr. Trump. And as I was saying, in the Intercept, there's an article about the whole situation. And as I was saying about the Intercept, I view it as one of your better sources of actual journalism. So I'll be continuing with that in a moment. But right now, Ali is on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Ali. Oh, I'm sorry. Lynn is on the air.
Oh, thanks. Hey, thanks for covering this. I just wanted to give a shout out. This is kind of time sensitive. Yesterday, NBC reported that Chelsea Manning is on a short list for commutation with Obama, which I find amazing.
I find it amazing, too. I can't really see Obama doing that pardon, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the thing is who knows? You know, maybe why would she even be on the short list? Can I give a phone number for people to call the DOJ?
Why not?
Yeah, this is a DOJ comments line. It's area code 202-353-1555. And again, that's 202-353-1555. Probably get a busy signal. I think I had to call back 4 or 5 times, but you can get through, and it's a very, very easy. It's just a recording, so, you know, no hassle or anything with it.
Okay, so that's to encourage the pardon for Chelsea Manning.
Yeah. Well, commutation.
Commutation, right? All right.
Yeah. And since you specifically asked about the general strike, I'm a member of the IWW. We believe in general strikes for a long time. I'm a little concerned. Strikes generally have a goal. I'm not sure what the goal of this one is. I'm not sure what the follow-up is. And if, I don't know if you've read much about what happened in Wisconsin. There was a move to have a general strike there. And, you know, first of all, so few people are in unions. And second, the business unions are not really set up for that anymore because it was made illegal with Taft-Hartley. So I'd like to hear more about, you know, what the goal of it is and what follow-up would be. But it is a very exciting idea, and I certainly hope it comes off.
Well, I think the first goal that I hear for this strike would be opposition to Trump's fascism, his racism, his plan to deport millions, and then just on down the line, it's against Trump's presidency. He has gained it illegitimately, and his policies are offensive and let's use that word again, corrosive to the society.
On January 22nd, how will you know if that goal has been reached or not?
On January 20, well, I'd say on the 21st, it'll be interesting because the women's march will be the next day. And I imagine that general strike actions in the streets will roll over to those protests. On the 22nd, I will look and see, did a substantial number of people leave work? Were there a substantial number of people on the streets? Is there any notice in social and community media about the size of it? I wouldn't count on the corporate media covering it at all. It'd have to be wildly successful for the corporate media to cover it. But, you know, who knows? Perhaps it will be wildly successful. We have seen things like Occupy, which were based on this sort of agitation where the basic idea and a date was put out, as you will recall. And what do you plan to do? Are you going to work as usual?
Well, since I'm involuntarily retired, yeah.
Do you plan to go out on the street at all? Do you plan to protest Trump's inauguration? Because that is its primary goal, to protest Trump's inauguration and the fascistization of America.
Well, there's a difference between a strike and a protest.
Okay, you, sir, are being a naysayer. Do you realize that at this point?
No, I'm being a critic as somebody who's been involved in organizing around actual issues, and I'm just hoping for some clarification. I'm not being a naysayer. I'm asking for clarification. But thank you for your time, and as I say, I sure hope it comes off as well, although I'm not much more clear about, you know, what's going to be different as a result of it. But I do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for
and
calling
I'm not
in.
Sir, I'm a trans woman. But...
Oh, I'm... well, that's ironic, isn't it? I'm very sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I blew it. And thank you for pointing that out.
Let's hope we don't blow it the next 4 years.
Yeah.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And let's see, I think that Cody is on the air.
Yeah. How you doing, Teresa?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
Great fan. I've always been a fan of your show. You've always been keeping it real. I'm not necessarily against Trump 100% for a couple of reasons, but I'd like to get your take on the media, the legacy media conflict with him, as opposed to, let's say, a more reputable or at least a more journalistic like The Intercept, for instance. And how I was the person who put in the question as far as the strange bedfellows in Washington, D.C.
Strange bedfellows, indeed. Well, actually, the Intercept article is basically covering what you're asking there, and so I can continue with that. But generally speaking, what I'm seeing, I think, is the DNC and the factions associated with that power, the presidency and the former, now former power or fading power in Washington, furious over the fact that I think they at some level realized that the election was stolen, but they can't come out and say that the election was stolen in the way that Greg Palast has delineated, because that would indicate that it was illegitimate. And they can't handle, I mean, they represent the elites. They represent the financial elites. They represent Goldman Sachs, for example, and Exxon, certainly. And the disruption and the call for a new election and the questioning of the entire system that would take place if the general public knew in its majority that how the election was stolen and that it was illegitimate specifically and legally in that way is something they could not possibly handle. And so they are taking their revenge and they are trying to dampen the power of the new Trump administration by coming up with this deep state attack, this deep state set of true true statements and false allegations. And the corporate media laps it up, as they always have. I mean, they've come up. I mean, you remember how it was after 9/11 and all of the ridiculous allegations. Do you remember that Saddam Hussein had a nuclear weapon, and we had to fear that? And
a lot of people died over that, called false information.
Yeah. So I think that's what they're up to, and I have some details on that from Glenn Greenwald.
Okay, well, that leads into the next question about this troop movement from Germany into Poland. And
okay.
I'll pick the rest off the air. Thanks very much.
Troop movement from Germany into Poland. Well, I guess I better look that up if I'm going to comment on it. And see if I can get that going. Oh, it's a great time for my computer to freeze up. Well, the number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And gosh, I feel like Reagan with a teleprompter. I had all this blah blah to say about Glenn Greenwald. Oh, it's decided to work now. I guess it's getting old. So pardon me. Maybe I'll sing a little song as I attempt to roll forward. There we go. So we're talking about the allegations against Trump. Greenwald points out that it's the deep state that is now engaged in open warfare against the duly elected and already disliked president-elect. And he writes, their most valuable instrument is the U.S. media, much of which reflexively reveres, serves, believes, and sides with hidden intelligence officials. And before I read more on that, from my viewpoint, that is an absolutely true, verifiable statement. And there's so many anecdotes that I could give to support it. So I'll just pull some out of the hat. One of my favorites was way back in 1984, when Ronald Reagan was running for re-election. The deep state decided they liked Ronald Reagan. You know, why not? They'd gotten all kinds of funding out of him. I believe it was about that time that they switched to black funding, meaning that you don't get to know how many billions are assigned to the so-called intelligence community, which is actually a secret police community and war-making community. And so they put an article in the New York Times, and it wasn't on the front page, but it was in there where it would be shared with other papers and read. And the article said, and there was never any follow-up on this, and this is sort of thing that tells me it had all the marks of a deep state planted article. The article said that the Sandinistas, remember them, in Nicaragua, remember that, were currently receiving MiG fighters from a freighter that had just docked in the port there in Managua. And oh my gosh, MiG fighters, as we had been told before, you know, could fly over the United States, and there was, you know, possibility of, you know, nuclear war from those Sandinistas. And this is all made up. I mean, especially with all the time that has passed since then, you know, with decades passed, we can see how ridiculous that allegation was. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it was a false allegation in terms of its effects. And people who believe that sort of thing and don't have the sophistication to notice that it's deep state BS were motivated and ran out to be sure they voted for Ronald Reagan on the following day, and he won the election handily. Not just from that one article, but I mean, that's the sort of thing that the deep state does, has always done. That's the sort of thing that's the thing that I call the monopoly media. And they are doing that now, and they're doing that against Trump, which is ironic because he's not actually opposed to them. He may think that he is in some ways, but he's about elite rule and they're about elite rule, but he's not one of them. You know, it's almost like a frat boy fight. So I have more on the Greenwald article, which I would like to quote, although I'll tell you, best you read it yourself, it's at The Intercept, and it's the top article. President-elect using unverified claims as... Deep state goes to war with the president-elect using unverified claims as a Dems cheer is the name of it. Jack is on line one.
Yeah, I think that you're talking about the deep state is important here, and it's the thing that the mainstream media simply cannot even get close to. And whether or not it's because they've got resident spooks on staff or what, I mean, Colby Toll is on record as quoted as every major news source in the country is run by the CIA. I've never seen that one. There's a lot of attempts to refute that, and I've never seen it defended clearly. There's another one people should remember, and this one has been questioned and refuted, I should say defended, by the person who heard the statement in the meeting and did get it out. And that's from William Casey, who was Reagan's CIA director. The quote is, "We'll know our disinformation program is working when everyone in the United States believes the lies that we're putting out," something to that effect. And this, it goes so far back. I just had an exchange with my local newspaper who was focusing on the fake news, and he's saying, "Oh, Stalin became the best at making fake news." And I had to point out to him that, well, this goes a lot further back than that. And I found online a World War I war propaganda poster showing a German soldier bayoneting a Belgian baby.
Yeah, bayoneting babies.
Yeah, you know what I mean? This stuff is so old, but people seem to, they probably don't want to think about it, really. You know, it's not pleasant to think about that you're being lied to by the authorities. And people who will defer to authority in making arguments is just a weak polemic. So anyway, it's something, you have to keep coming back to the deep state. As far as the emails go, the hacking, there's a number of experts have come out now and saying everything we've looked at about these things show us that the emails themselves were leaks, not hacks, and there's some pretty severe skullduggery surrounding that, especially with the DNC. Person who was killed in Washington, who was murdered on the street, and nothing was stolen from him. So, anyway, it's quite a dangerous business, and I think that you're right about Trump getting the word from the deep state that you better work with us, or you may be facing a deal, an offer, as it were, that you can't refuse.
That could happen. Yep. Okay, well, thank you very much for your call. Remember to call 503-231-8187. I think we have Michael online, too.
This is Michael.
Hello, Michael.
In answer to your question, what I'll be doing on the 20th, I have a VA appointment on the 23rd, so they usually call on the 20th to confirm, and I'll probably cancel it. I should have canceled my VA appointment on Monday because of the snow. And I had a problem with TriMet. You know, like two buses drove back and forth and didn't even pick up people at our stop. And I had to sit out across country, and I slipped and broke my tooth. So I'm really upset with all the intergovernmental agencies' response to everything right now. And in terms of the training films that were made about people being killed by the SEALs, I watched those. I was in the room with those people 15 years ago. The other thing is, in Bremerhaven right now, there is a deployment of troops, battalions that are going into Poland. So I just wanted to close the loop with the previous caller.
All right. And what's your source on that? Maybe that's just in the latest news, and I didn't check it before I went in.
Well, I heard the story yesterday, and I can't actually, I mean, I listened to your radio station all day yesterday morning, so it's probably on the archives.
All right. Okay, thanks for that information.
Yeah, thank you very much, and good luck to everybody.
Okay, bye. Thanks for calling in. Well, it's not showing up on the Google News roll, which doesn't mean anything. I'll type in Bremerhaven. Let's see if I spelled it correctly. Oh, it's not even taking that, so I've got a bulky computer. Sometimes I get paranoid about computers and print everything out to make sure this doesn't happen, and I guess I should have done it today. Anyway, the number to call, 503-231-8187. Been talking about the deep state and its apparent attack on Trump, and talking about how ironic that is, and also the fact that it's, it's just creepy. Okay, here we are, largest deployment of U.S. troops since Cold War arrives in Germany, the source being the Reverend Sun Moon organization owned UPI.com. Let me see what else I can find. I do not see a direct confirmation. Here's U.S. tanks rolling to Germany to bolster NATO deterrent. That's from the Houston Chronicle. Let's see if they got that from UPI or if they have their own sources. A little exercise in checking the news. And it's just not going to happen quickly enough for broadcast. So I'll go back to the topic that I was bringing up, namely that this deep state sort of thing, this deep state manipulation of the public is continuous. As one caller was pointing out, at least going back to the World War and famously going back to the First World War, that is, and famously going back to Remember the Maine, to hell with Spain, 1898 war with Spain, and the handy snatching of Spain's colonies that took place after that, including Cuba, including the Philippines. For me, it's been a continuous thing, and it's the sort of thing I expect from the deep state. And I look at corporate news reports about things of import in that context, and it really irritates people who have gone to war or who have lost people in the wars that the U.S. has conducted over the last decade or so. But the fact is, you can't turn three large, very, very large buildings into dust and make them free fall into their own footprint. Yes, I said three buildings, by striking them with airplanes and causing a kerosene fire. That is not physically possible. So if you believe in physics, if you agree with Sir Isaac Newton that F equal MA, if you believe in the laws of momentum, then we were had. That was faked. Those buildings had been rigged over the preceding month or so with a type of thermite that was very finely milled. It's called nanothermite. And Ken is on the air. Number to call, 503-231-8187.
Yeah, the article about troops going into Poland,
yes,
was published, well, today, or rather yesterday, is on Global Research, U.S. tanks and troops at Russia border, and that's sources RT News. But I should point out, I think, that about 3 days or so ago, I saw a similar article that was, and the source was Donbass News Agency, which struck me as strange because it's the first time I've ever seen that in the major media.
Yeah, Donbass being one of the pro-Russian factions that is remaining in the, the eastern part of Ukraine, where they are still loyal. Okay, well, here's an article from Associated Press. Ships began unloading U.S. tanks, self-propelled howitzers, and hundreds of other fighting vehicles Friday into the northern German port of Bremerhaven to be moved into Eastern Europe to bolster NATO's deterrence against possible Russian aggression. So, okay, there we have it from several sources, and so that we can say that is not fake news.
No, but the other interesting thing is I'm on the line today trying to find the original article from Donbass, and it seems to have been scrubbed from Global Research, which kind of surprises me.
Huh.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thanks for calling in. Okay, so I've been talking about the deep state, which we live under. I've been talking about the information that they have been using. Now, I've been trying to make the point that these allegations against Trump are spurious and injurious to Trump, and they are coming from factions in the U.S. that don't like him. And the first thing I said at the top of the hour was I find it deliciously ironic. I am enjoying it at some level, and on the other hand, this is the deep state showing its fangs, and that should scare the hell out of you, because, yeah, they do run things. And it's not actually particularly comforting that they dislike Trump so much that they will act out to this degree. I guess the thing that is getting down to the bottom line, the thing that scares me is that they are acting out to this degree, that they are trying to whip up public paranoia and fear against Russia. And so you've got Trump doing his deny thing, deny, deny, deny. He does that very well. I mean, he really, as a person who has been in elite class since the day he was born, who received not 1 million, but many, many millions from his father, he has always been able to say to his entourage, to his coterie, if that's the right word, that this is the way things are. And He always had the power to get rid of anyone who contradicted him. And so he actually believes that he can define reality. It's a sad thing for the development of his psyche, or the lack of development of his psyche, but that's where he's at. And so now he's in a situation where he has to work a lot harder to deny things. And it might be a kind of a first time for him. It may be confusing for him. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And Linda is on the air.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you for your show. I'm sorry I missed the very beginning of it. But about the troop buildup, I heard it on the news yesterday also, and I heard, I believe, a U.S. military person talking about the purpose. So I've been looking it up on the web, and I come up with a first, I just looked on troop movements, and there's many different outlets, Pittsburgh Gazette, The Independent, the RT, mentioning it. And so then I went to Obama on troop buildup, because one of them said it was part of an Obama initiative, and I haven't quite found any quotes from him yet. I do think it's real, though. It's part of this buildup we started back in the 90s, and then we held it up for a while. The explanations of it say that. It also says, began arriving in Germany last week for deployment in the 7 NATO countries near Russia. The units are from the 4th Infantry Division, the 10th Combat Aviation Brigade, and the 3rd Armored Brigade Combat Team. With 6,000 additional troops will come 87 M1A1 tanks, 144 Bradley fighting vehicles, artillery, and aircraft. Headquarters will be in Germany, but the forces will ultimately be deployed to Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Slovakia, Romania, and Bulgaria. Their first exercise will be with Polish troops at the end of this month. This is part of Operation Atlantic Resolve. I suppose I could Google that next, but I think it sounds like it's something that's actually our government is saying is happening, and I don't know from there.
You know, and as you
there's
heard,
a lot of specifics.
Sure, yeah, as you heard, it's on Donbass, it's on RT, and it's on AP. So okay, it's happening, and well, it's that in a sense, you know, I think we can read it as a gesture. Certainly, it can be used for biting off bits of territory like they did with Ukraine. You know, once they can get the political cover for it, once you have a Victoria Nuland.
All of that side's anti-Russia buildup around but that side of the oligarchy, I'm saying, that side of the oligarchy's buildup of anti-Russian sentiment and fear that's been going on. So it seems like that could, this is another, you know, this is, we really mean it.
Yeah, and it is. You know, it's a weird thing because ever since the 50s, of course, it doesn't matter if you've got a, you know, top of the line M1, A1 tank. It doesn't matter if you have 1,000 of them, because nuclear weapons. you can't invade Russia with tanks because they can all be obliterated.
Well, absolutely. Germany learned that. I don't think having a real winter here now. They could barely invade Portland.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or the northeast part of the country, or Ottawa. I don't know. They get bogged down in the snow, it seems, when they go after Russia with tanks, is all I'm saying.
I'm going to enjoy talking with, pardon me while I stumble here. I'm going to enjoy talking with more people on the line, I hope, It's expanding on my own thoughts because my computer is completely died. So all the notes that I had that I did not print up, oh, silly me. Somehow it knew that today I did not print hard copy. So the number to call, 503-231-8187. And let's see, do we have someone else on the air? At this point, we do not. So you can get in right away, 503-231-8187. I was also talking about the weather. And about capitalism and the very sad fact, the unavoidable fact, that several people have died in the Portland weather because we have so many people on the streets. I want to talk generally about capitalism, too, and the sort of thing that we get used to and we don't see anymore. And that is, there are so many facets to the fact that it seems so difficult to get housing. We've gotten used to the fact that we all have to scramble and pay a huge portion of our income for housing, and of course that includes utilities. And if you think of it, how much are you paying? What portion of your income are you paying for housing and utilities? And do you have the savings to get by for several months while you look for another job if you lost your job today? And the answer, of course, for the vast majority of you listening to me right now is hell no. Now, how did this happen? Why didn't we have so many people in the streets in, say, 1964? The reason being, the reasons are wages were far better compared to housing. Housing was more available because we hadn't gotten into this situation nearly to the degree we have now, where we have vast conglomerates that have bought up. They do this in Portland constantly. A lot of them come from New York. Conglomerates buy up housing as soon as it's available, and especially during a crash. When there's a crash in the price of housing, as there was just a few years ago, houses get snapped up, housing gets snapped up, lots, uninhabitable housing, doesn't matter, gets snapped up by the very, very rich, and they take that off the market. And there are many tactics that they employ. Talking about New York-based, for example, New York-based housing conglomerates pick up this real estate and take it off the market, and that means that the remaining rentals they have available, or remaining sales if they wish, go up higher in price because there's not as much available when they simply refuse to sell. And they've bought so much for so long that it is possible to do this, and yes, it is done in collusion. And so these are the powers. These are the people who have the money to fund, for example, city council candidates, by and large. And this thing has been going on for so long, and wages have been depressed for so long, especially post-Reagan, the great attack on the American worker post-Reagan after the PATCO strike, and the angry, corrupt, elite bootlickers like we now have gaining power, took power in 1980. And we had this horrible spasm of this sort of thing. And it's gotten worse since then, much worse, so that your income and your probability of getting a job that pays decently, your ability to get housing and maintain housing, even if you don't have a job, because of this great disparity between wages and housing costs, now you see the true bite of capitalism. And I saw the bite of capitalism as I walked to KBOO today. I saw people, and I had to stop, just or at least slow down and make sure there was just that little bit of vapor coming out of the nose of people laying, for God's sakes, on blankets on the sidewalk. Not because they're drunks, not because they're bad people, but because there is no place for them to go. I'm sure a lot of them are drunk and I remember when I was briefly, suddenly homeless, I found that a couple beers really helps you catch a few Z's when you're trying to sleep on the ground before dawn comes, because dawn takes a long time when you're upset, unsure, anxious. So what's the point of sneering at people when they're homeless? But we've been trained to do so. And yeah, there's a lot of people homeless here on the east side of Portland, out in the snow, sleeping right next to the snow. And it's a shocking failure of this system. And we have a call from Daniel.
Thank you, Teresa, for having me. I love your show. For all the callers out there, I'm Polish blood. Parents, are Polish. I grew up a little bit in Poland during the communist. If you guys got to study the history of Poland to understand that we are kind of used to be a satellite state of the Soviet Union during the breakup. We became kind of independent, and we fought for our freedom through Lech Wałęsa and the Union Yards, and we became very humbled by our American friends to keep us away from Russian harm. Once again, they are a bully. They took away Ukraine just about 1,000 miles away. Polish people go through their struggles with their government up and down through abortion laws, through media laws. They are very much like the first wave of laws against the government.
So the point being that you hate Russians for being so pushy?
No, I would never say that. Throughout the history, there's been aggression there. You know what big bullies do in schoolyards, and you know what it means to kind of small teams gather up and go against this in NATO alliance. Please study the history of Poland and how much America's influence to gain respect there. It is kind of a trophy state for America at this point, and it doesn't want to go back to Russian hands. And us Polish people are very grateful for all the things. And it's a small 4,000 troops. It is a deterrence. And you see that in Japan.
I think I hear what you're saying there, and no doubt you feel that from your own experiences. But the fact is, the Russians Russians have enough money to maintain their nuclear fleet to keep the Americans from completely obliterating them without retaliation, but they don't have the funds, they don't have nearly the funds, nor the inclination to expand their territory against the United States, and that is not happening.
I agree that you see that in Belarus, Estonia. You see that in questionable Lithuania. These are very far to the east, but you have to understand the history of Poland and its whole history within the Teutonic Order and the Persians and deterring Muslim during the
Sure. We are running out of time, and I appreciate your call and your comments on that. All right, you've been listening to Press Watch, and I would just like to wind up by saying that, yes, this is propaganda against Trump that you're seeing. Some of it's true, some of it's bogus. It is coming from the deep state. It kind of reveals the sort of society that we actually live in and who maintains the powers that be and who the powers that be are. And they aren't necessarily the officials that you've elected. So pay attention to that. And once again, there are articles and information and even posters in the street coming out about the general strike on January 20th. So stay tuned for more information on that. And you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you via 90.7 FM on our transmitter on the hill, other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.